Chapter 4. The settlement is small compared to Hutao, not much more than a cluster of the round Oirat-style tents and some wooden shacks around a single stone building. The smallest Ming fort Tongfan has ever seen. Sui Zhou leads them through the surprisingly busy streets, bare mud churned up underfoot by countless hooves, and brings them to a small shopfront. They tether the horses outside and duck through the curtained doorway. Inside are rich smells of meat stewing in spices, enlivening after the crisp smell of snow with undertones of horse manure found outside. And Tongfan's mouth waters. "Are we meeting them here?" he mutters to Sui Zhou as he takes a seat opposite him at a small table. Before Sui Zhou can answer, a woman in typical Oirat garb is hurrying over to their table. "Sui Zhou," she cries in a low voice, and Tongfan blinks in surprise when she grasps Sui Zhou's hand where it's resting on the table. "I'm so happy to see you here." Sui Zhou squeezes her hand briefly. "Lin Su," he says, voice kind. "I'm sorry it took so long." She takes her hand back and waves it dismissively. "There's nothing to apologize for. Would you like some lamb and vegetables? I'll fetch you some and join you." She shoots a quick glance at Tongfan, smiling, then bustles away. Sui Zhou meets Tongfan's gaze, nodding slightly. Lin Su is back within a few moments, laying out plates and a great steaming platter of food before taking a seat at the small table.
"This is Tongfan, my xiongdi,"
Sui Zhou says once she's settled, nodding across the table. Lin Su dips her head at Tongfan. "Any friend of Sui Zhou is welcome here," she says, smiling warmly. Tongfan gives a loose bow in response. "It's an honor," he says, and her smile brightens.
"Sui Zhou, are you staying for long?"
Sui Zhou shakes his head.
"Passing through. We're on our way back to the capital. Is Jia Tung well?"
She leans in closer, lowering her voice.
"He goes by Lin Tung now," she says, and her smile is now small, almost nervous. "Sui Zhou, I know I was rude last time you were here, and I hope you will forgive me. You were right about his name. It was only that I..."
"No apology needed,"
Sui Zhou says, cutting her off gently.
"I understand."
Grief and gratitude shine in her gaze.
"I'm so glad you came back, Sui Zhou."
She takes a deep breath.
"Tung Er is helping in the kitchen. He will be almost as good a cook as his father, I think. And I have been able to afford to pay for help in the restaurant."
She glances up at one of the serving women, working busily with other customers.
"I'm glad," Sui Zhou says simply. "And I know he would be too."
She grips his hand again, squeezing tight, seeming unable to speak. After a long moment of silence, she says,
"He always warned me that it would end. But I still..."
She shakes her head, letting go of Sui Zhou's hand to stand again.
"I will fetch Tung Er, and you will be able to see how much he's grown."
In the silence after she's left, Sui Zhou stares down at the platter of food for a moment, before moving a portion of lamb onto Tongfan's plate.
"Eat,"
he says. For all that they haven't had anything since breakfast, Tongfan doesn't feel hungry, and he lifts the meat to his mouth slowly.
Jia Kui's son is perhaps only a year or two older than Cheng Er, and his resemblance to his father makes Tang Fan's heart hurt. He dutifully answers Sui Zhou's questions, calls him Sui Xu Xu, and brightens significantly when Sui Zhou sneaks what Tang Fan recognizes as an envelope of candies into his hands while his mother isn't looking. At the end of the meal, Sui Zhou leaves a pouch that clinks heavily on the table with the sound of silver tails, and Lin Su bows to him before he leaves. He urges her up. I only hope I can visit sooner next time. They don't speak until they're well out of town. It's Jia Kui's money still, Sui Zhou says, unprompted. He gave me a gold tail to give to them. They would have been suspicious of my story if I handed that over, and trying to spend it would have only drawn attention to them. I make sure to visit every year. Tang Fan had seen the size of the pouch. He has no doubt they have more than enough to live off. Then he remembers something else. Jia Kui cooks? Sui Zhou's smile is almost wistful. When I found him, he was a chef in his own restaurant. It was small, just a roadside place. He takes a deep breath. I wish I had tried the food. Sui Zhou rarely speaks of his regrets. He rarely speaks much of his feelings at all. Tang Fan wishes they weren't riding. If they were walking, he could perhaps move a little closer, brush Sui Zhou's shoulder with his own. His son doesn't recognize me. Sui Zhou is staring ahead. Sometimes I'm unsure if I'm grateful for it or not. He seems lost in the past, a different mental space than when he's thinking through a problem. This has more of a distance to it. Like he's not quite present. Tang Fan grasps for something to draw him out of it, feeling unmoored himself. Ah, Guang Chuan, if only they had chosen He Tao to settle in, then the whole matter would already be resolved and we wouldn't have had to camp in the snow, he gripes. Sui Zhou blinks, turns to look at him with a softly incredulous look. Were you cold last night? The tent had been small, just large enough for the two of them to lie on their backs side by side. Tang Fan had been surprised by how warm it had been. Not in a little part due to the number of furs and blankets Sui Zhou had packed. The spicy lamb stew had warmed him from the inside out. The sound of Sui Zhou's steady breathing filled the space comfortably like it never did when they slept in the open air. Tang Fan had fallen asleep easily. Hadn't remembered his dreams. He pouts. I was freezing. The ground was like ice. I couldn't feel my nose when I woke up. I was worried it was going to snap off. It would never, Sui Zhou says, and Tang Fan rubs the nose in question, wrinkling it and pursing his lips. Close your cloak, Sui Zhou instructs, and Tang Fan's hands are reaching up to hook the clasp together before he's even thought about it. The soft fleece clings around his neck. It helps. The lamb stew is even better having spent another day in the pot. It's a clear night, the sky strewn with stars above them, so it's even colder than if it were snowing. Sui Zhou had cleared the snow from their campsite and staked out their tent before nightfall, layering the covered ground within with more furs than Tang Fan thought could even be carried on a horse. Sui Zhou wraps the last fur around Tang Fan's shoulders, over the white cloak, as Tang Fan hunches in front of the small fire. Tang Fan pulls the soft collar up to brush his face, smiling at Sui Zhou as he crouches opposite and stirs the stew pot. Sui Zhou's eyes are so warm in the amber light of the fire, especially after a day of nothing but cold white as far as Tang Fan could see. It's cruel, Tang Fan says, breaking the comfortable silence as they finish their meal. Sui Zhou has been stargazing, and he looks back down as Tang Fan speaks. that they should be so close to each other, yet so painfully apart.
Sui Zhou's expression is sad, the flickering firelight deepening the dark behind him. He breaks their shared gaze to look into the fire, leaning forward to prod at the coals with a stick.
He has accepted it.
Tang Fan blinks. But do you think, if he knew how close they were?
Sui Zhou shakes his head. It's not how he is. His own feelings are not important.
After a pause, he adds,
it's how a lot of men who fought in the war are.
A log shifts in the fire, changing the vibrancy of the light, and sending a brief wisp of smoke in Tang Fan's direction. He can't see it, but he can smell it, and feel it briefly prickle at his eyes.
It's all right, Guang Chuan, Tang Fan says softly. I won't tell him.
Sui Zhou stares at him, eyes dark and gaze unfailing. Tang Fan can't look away. He can't bring himself to break the moment. Can't find a comment or complaint in him worthy of disrupting the way the heat and light of the fire seem to connect them together, if only for a few heartbeats.
Sui Zhou takes a deep breath and looks away. Then he lifts the empty pot and stands.
I'll clean this and bank the fire, he says,
walking away from their little circle of warm light, crouching to clean the pot in the snow. Tang Fan closes his eyes, a sudden relief from the fire's heat. He's surprisingly tired. On their journey from the capital, he had trained with Jin San 3 times a day and ridden far longer. And yet, a few hours in the saddle 2 days in a row now is enough to put him to sleep when the sun has barely set. He gathers cloak and fur around him and stands to stretch one last time before crouching low to enter the tent. Without the light of the stars and just the faint glow of the fire through the waterproof skin, it's much darker, and he sits to pull his boots off while his eyes adjust. Next, he shrugs off his jacket, leaving both layers of trousers on, but slipping the fur vest over his undershirt. He sets his clothes aside neatly, then feels his way to the other end of the tent until his fingertips touch the far wall. Then he bundles up his cloak to use for a pillow, leaving the fleece collar for its cover. He pulls the fur Sui Zhou wrapped around his shoulders over himself and curls up under it. The thick furs between him and the ground are lush, soft. He stifles his breath to better hear the sounds of Sui Zhou packing up his cooking equipment. His feet scuff in the snow, and he murmurs softly to the horses. They woof into their feed bags. What little remaining light there was dims to the sound of Sui Zhou banking the fire. Then the sound of his footsteps get closer, and there's a rush of cool air and the faint smell of smoke as he enters the tent. Tang Fan stares into the darkness as Sui Zhou pulls his boots off, listening to the faint sounds of Sui Zhou dressing for bed. Then there's the shifting air and sound as Sui Zhou crawls up the length of the tent to lie down next to him. It's so quiet, Tang Fan feels as though he can sense the immensity of the star-clouded sky looming above them, the prairie continuing on infinitely around them. Their small tent seems very small indeed. He listens to Sui Zhou breathing. Sui Zhou's waking breath has a different tempo to his sleeping breath. Tang Fan can't see him in the darkness, but he can sense the broad shape of him. He has to wrap his arms around himself to stop from reaching out to confirm it.
Are you cold?
Sui Zhou's voice startles a flash of color through Tang Fan's blind gaze. Tang Fan sniffs. I can't feel my fingers. He lies. Sui Zhou stirs. Then Tang Fan hears him moving closer. Tang Fan rolls over onto his back, trying to track the movement. A moment later, there are more layers being tucked around him. Sui Zhou's warm breath briefly tickles his face as he leans over Tang Fan,
And before Tong Fan has realized what he's doing, he's snaking an arm out and grasping towards Sui Zhou blindly. From the sharp intake of breath, he feels swell against his hand. He gathers he's grabbed Sui Zhou's undershirt over his chest. "See?" Tong Fan says, his voice feeling very distant, but also somehow very loud in the enclosed space of the tent. "Feel them." One breathless moment, and then Sui Zhou's warm fingers are tentatively brushing over the back of Tong Fan's hand. The sensation spreads out in a rush from the point of contact, a flush of sensitivity over Tong Fan's entire body. Sui Zhou's touch follows over his knuckles to his fingers, and then both of his hands are enclosing Tong Fan's warmly. Tong Fan swallows hard, blinking frantically into the darkness. Before he can process the feeling, Sui Zhou is lifting his hand gently. His grip shifts, and Tong Fan feels a damp heat as Sui Zhou breathes gently on his curled fingers. His thumb swipes over Tong Fan's knuckles in its wake.
"Better?"
Tong Fan tries to speak, but his breath comes out voiceless when he opens his mouth. He swallows, tries again. "Perhaps a little." He hears the amused huff of air from Sui Zhou's nose, feels it cool on the back of his hand. Then he feels warmth and softness, and the barely there scratch of Sui Zhou's beard as his lips press to the back of Tong Fan's fingers. Tong Fan's heart surges into his mouth. "Quang Chuan!" He chokes around it. Sui Zhou must hear it in his voice. A second later, Sui Zhou is fumbling to find Tong Fan's face in the dark, and then his soft mouth is pressing against Tong Fan's. Tong Fan makes a noise in his throat, uncontrolled, and struggles to free his other arm from the furs and blankets so he can wrap both around Sui Zhou's shoulders and pull him down. Sui Zhou lands half on him with a huff, and when Tong Fan's lips open, startled, Sui Zhou seals his mouth over them and sweeps his tongue inside lightly, as if questioning. Tong Fan moans, instantly overcome.
"Run Qing."
Sui Zhou pulls back enough to breathe hard against his lips.
"Run Qing."
Tong Fan's toes curl, and he draws his body in toward the pinning weight of Sui Zhou's. He tightens his arms, slipping them around Sui Zhou's neck, and Sui Zhou drops his head next to Tong Fan's with a rush of breath. Tong Fan tilts his head to search with his lips. He finds Sui Zhou's prickly cheek and kisses the corner of his mouth once, twice. Sui Zhou is shaking. Tong Fan weaves his restless fingers into Sui Zhou's hair. He's never felt either so utterly out of his depth or so perfectly in the right place before. He doesn't know what to do next. Sui Zhou lifts his head again, his breath hot on Tong Fan's face, and his thumb stroking over Tong Fan's cheek, brushing lightly against the corner of his eyelashes. He presses a gentle kiss to Tong Fan's lips again, then draws away. Tong Fan grabs for him again, and Sui Zhou allows him to grasp the sleeve of his undershirt, staying tethered while he rearranges their bedrolls. Tong Fan shivers and presses in close when Sui Zhou slips under the furs and blankets next to him. Then Sui Zhou is gathering the rest of the bedding around and over them, covering them completely in a heated embrace. The darkness is absolute, and Sui Zhou's hands find Tong Fan's again where they're curled against his chest. He guides them up to touch his face, and Tong Fan explores gently, fingers smoothing through Sui Zhou's beard, sweeping up to his ears, lightly brushing his closed eyelashes. Sui Zhou's lips are startlingly tender under the pads of his fingers, and when Sui Zhou makes a soft noise, Tong Fan tips his head forward to try and find Sui Zhou's mouth with his own. He succeeds after a moment, feeling his own fingers against his lips before moving them swiftly out of the way. Sui Zhou lets Tong Fan kiss him, lets Tong Fan hold and move his face as he likes, lets Tang Fan taste the seam of his lips and opens them to let Tang Fan taste inside as well. His hand rests tentatively on Tang Fan's hip as they lie facing each other. And when Tang Fan hums and wriggles closer, he slides it back around Tang Fan's waist, beneath the fur vest. The touch makes Tang Fan shiver, even in the warm cocoon they're in. He wants more. More of Sui Zhou. All of Sui Zhou. Wants to wrap himself up in Sui Zhou and never come out. He winds his arms around Sui Zhou's neck, pressing closer, angling his head to make the kiss deeper. He's not very skilled at it, but Sui Zhou doesn't seem to mind, responding with equal enthusiasm. Sui Zhou's arm tightens around him and pulls him forward, over, and Tang Fan gasps at the sudden movement. Tang Fan pants, adjusting to the change. He sprawled half on top of Sui Zhou's body. His breath cools the wet skin around his mouth, and his lips burn faintly from the friction of Sui Zhou's beard.
"Is this okay?"
Sui Zhou whispers. Tang Fan nods, swallowing, then realizes that Sui Zhou can't see him. He wishes he could see the look in Sui Zhou's eyes. He can imagine his concern from hearing the edge of uncertainty coloring his tone. Tang Fan kisses him softly again, strokes his hair. It seems to be a tangled mess, spread out on the furs below them. Tang Fan wants very much to soothe his fingers through it and neaten it for him. He wants so much. He laughs, a breathless whisper of it, the tumult of energy that's rushing through him, seeking an escape. In the dark, he doesn't need to push the feelings down or divert it elsewhere. Sui Zhou strokes his back gently, and Tang Fan relaxes, dropping his head to rest on Sui Zhou's shoulder. The dark heat of Sui Zhou's neck has a heady scent, and Tang Fan's body gives a sudden shudder. "I'm not cold," he says obstinately, muffled a little in Sui Zhou's shirt.
"I know,"
Sui Zhou murmurs, words stirring his hair. Tang Fan feels him press a kiss there. Tang Fan wills his body to be still, seeking the blissful, warm quiet that had soothed his mind while he and Sui Zhou had kissed. Sui Zhou simply keeps up the gentle touches to Tang Fan's back, his body below Tang Fan's an anchor in the dark, and Tang Fan has a second to relish the calm he achieves, a moment before he falls asleep. When Tang Fan wakes, it's to find he's moved during the night, furs and blankets slip down to his shoulders. Dim dawn light filtering through the tent means he can see the interior for the first time. Sui Zhou is no longer next to him, though Tang Fan is very thoroughly tucked in, and he struggles up enough to peer over the mound of blankets and furs to look for him. There, Sui Zhou is seated near the opening of the tent, where their packs are piled by the door, his back to Tang Fan. He's combing through his hair with his fingers, sifting out the chaos from the night before. He's dressed already, and Tang Fan's heart lurches far too sharply for this early in the morning. Feeling uncertainty? Shyness? Whatever it is, he doesn't like it. Tang Fan sits up. At the sound, Sui Zhou looks back over his shoulder, then twists his body to half-face Tang Fan. They stare at each other for long moments, each searching the other's eyes, until Tang Fan breaks it with a yawn, rubbing his face and stretching. He flops back down into the warm nest of furs.
"Will you make congee for breakfast?"
Sui Zhou only pauses for a moment.
"Mm," he says at last. "I'll start it now."
There's a sharp slice of cold air as he pushes through the tent curtain, then heavy silence after he's left. Tang Fan listens to him kindling the fire, then to the rushing whisper of rice being poured into the iron pot. He sucks in a deep breath and pushes the blankets and furs off himself, crawling to the front of the tent to pull the rest of his clothes back on. Suejo looks up as he steps out of the tent, eyes wide, and a moment later shuddered as Tang Fan's gaze skitters away from him. Tang Fan wraps his cloak around himself more tightly. It's a cold morning, fog sitting heavy and low on the prairie around them. Then crunches his way through the crust of snow to check on the horses. His mind turns over and over the night before, and with each piece of scrutiny, the memories lose their warmth, their ease. Tension tightens Tang Fan's fingers into fists, energy bouncing through him with no outlet. The horses snort steam into the air grumpily when Tang Fan forces his hands open so he can scratch their flanks. And for a brief moment, Tang Fan envies their life of simple servitude. Then he tucks his arms back under his cloak, shoves his whirling thoughts aside, and walks slowly back to the campsite. Suecho doesn't look up as Tang Fan approaches, and Tang Fan can read the tension in his shoulders as he stares at the pot hanging over the fire. "Do you have any of the lamb spices left? They might be nice in the kanji," Tang Fan asks, moving to sit on the opposite side of the fire. When Suejo looks up, Tang Fan smiles warmly. Suejo says, some of the tension falling away.
"A little. I'll add them to the pot."
The sun is glowing coldly through the fog as they pack up camp and prepare to head back to Hetao. As self-sufficient as Dong Ar is, neither of them really like to leave her for long so far away from home. Although she is, no doubt, still basking in her Wang Daga's attention. The packs and bedrolls are strapped to the horses' saddles, and they are preparing to mount when there's a sudden thunder of horses' hooves crashing towards them. Suizhou reaches for the hilt of his sword, and Tang Fan grabs at his horse's reins, trying to keep it from spooking, as a group of men on horseback emerge from the fog. Their horses rapidly encircle Suizhou and Tang Fan, snow spitting out in arcs as hooves churn violently through it. Tang Fan looks frantically at Suizhou, who gestures him close. Tang Fan doesn't hesitate to drop the horse's reins and step near enough for their shoulders to press together. From their clothes and tack, Tang Fan can tell immediately that the men are Oirat, and he looks at each of them rapidly in turn, seeking more information. Answers as to why they're being accosted. Then his gaze reaches the man sitting on the pawing horse at the head of the circle and feels his stomach drop. There's a ringing in Tang Fan's ears, and he can't quite manage to suck in enough air on every inhale. His fingers feel icy, numb. Suizhou draws his sword, pushing Tang Fan behind him. A Shittimore laughs.
"I had hoped we would meet again,"
he says, eyes locked on Tang Fan.
"I hadn't expected it would be on my doorstep. What good fortune."
It's as though he's speaking from very far away. Tang Fan's breath is harsh, loud in his ears. He fights against the inertia, making his body feel like a wooden doll's, grasping for the knife tucked into his belt even as he keeps his eyes fixed on Ashutamor. He draws it out, holding the shaking point of it past Suizhou's guarding arm. In an instant, Ashutamor's initial amusement at the gesture turns dark and angry. "How dare you hold that knife?" he spits, horse dancing skittishly beneath him as his fists tighten in the reins. He signals, and suddenly some of the men on horseback are moving in towards them, a carefully choreographed attack, sweeping in and darting away from the flash of Suizhou's sword just as quickly. Tang Fan and Suizhou try to shelter behind their own horses, but the animals are too easily spooked. They're not trained for battle like the war horses, which dodge easily, even as Tang Fan and Suizhou's mounts whinny wildly and canter away. Tang Fan has seen Suizhou fight off dozens of assailants at once, but not while they're on horseback. Tong Fan puts his back to Sui Zhou's and tries to keep the knife up in a defensive stance. Even if he has no hope of fighting them off himself, he can at least protect Sui Zhou's back, and not himself be another weak point Sui Zhou needs to defend. The Oirats attack from all sides. Tong Fan, at least, they are not trying to kill. There are too many times he's open and vulnerable and left unharmed. Their most powerful blows rain down on Sui Zhou, his shoulders straining as he holds them back, with his sword held above him. Desperate, Tong Fan strikes a stabbing blow into the thigh of a man he sees, sweeping his curving sword in an arc towards Sui Zhou's neck. He's not sure who's more surprised when the knife sinks into its target, himself or the victim. The knife's hilt is wrenched out of his hand a moment later, and Tong Fan stumbles and cries out, trying desperately to avoid falling beneath the stamping hooves. In front of him, Sui Zhou jerks around, drawn by the sound of Tong Fan's cry, and Tong Fan watches in horror as the man riding up behind him deals a swift and powerful blow to the back of Sui Zhou's head with a club. It makes a horrible sound, and Sui Zhou drops to the ground, lifeless as a sack of rice. Tong Fan screams his name, feeling it burn raw in his throat. A moment later, there are hands grabbing at him. Some of the men have dismounted and are seizing his arms, hauling him back. Sui Zhou is face down in the churned snow. Everything else around Tong Fan is muffled, distant, as though a great explosion has just shaken everything loose from the world. Sharp fingers dig into the flesh of his cheek and jaw, and his head is jerked violently around to face Ashutamor, his smirking face only a hand's breadth away. "You shouldn't have tried to fight," Ashutamor says, his breath skin-crawlingly hot on Tong Fan's face. "This is not Ming territory." He uses his grip to shove Tong Fan away again. The only thing keeping Tong Fan from collapsing to the ground is the iron-strong grip on his upper arms. Sui Zhou's body is being dragged away through the snow. "No!" Tong Fan struggles, but it's useless. Ashutamor has mounted his own horse again, is wheeling it around. "Gag him," he throws over his shoulder, and Tong Fan is hauled away, losing sight of Sui Zhou entirely. His wrists are tied behind him and his ankles bound, and a ball of hessian is shoved and tied between his teeth before they throw him over the back of one of their horses. He tries to fight, but it's no use. None of it was any use. Even if Sui Zhou had crouched helpless on the ground as Tong Fan once had, they would still have killed him anyway. Tong Fan's head throbs hotly from hanging towards the ground, but the cold wind as they ride turns his tears to ice. Tong Fan doesn't know how long they've been riding for, when the ground beneath them changes into the familiar packed earth of a well-established campsite. He's shoved off the horse and onto the ground, the impact thumping the air right out of his lungs. He coughs painfully into the gag, mouth and throat desperately dry. A moment later, someone is hooking a pinching grip under his armpits and hauling him backward. Tong Fan struggles to look around, to get any information he can on where they've taken him. But his head is spinning, thick with pain. He's dragged into what he recognizes as one of the round Oirat tents, and lashed firmly to the central tent pole, seated facing away from the tent entrance. For a moment, it seems he's left alone, and his head drops to his chest, too weak to hold it up as he sucks in great, heaving breaths through his nose. He can't make himself think of escape. Behind his closed eyes, all he can see is the look of fear in Sui Zhou's eyes when he turned toward Tong Fan's cry. The sound of Sui Zhou being struck is repeating over and over in his mind. The sight of his body so horrifyingly lifeless as he fell to the ground, as they dragged him away. What did they do with his body? Tong Fan tries to suppress his sobs, lest the gag choke him. He wrenches his hands in their bonds, feeling the rope tear at the skin of his wrists. If he hadn't lost Dwarla's knife... The sound of someone else entering the tent cuts through the uncontrollable wheeze of his heaving chest. He frantically blinks tears out of his eyes, jerking his head around as another Oirat shuffles into the tent, dragging a body. Tongfun cries out through the gag despite himself, struggling anew. Sway Joe! Sway Joe! Surely they wouldn't bring his body here unless it was to torture Tongfun by defiling it. They definitely wouldn't be binding Sui Jo's limp hands and tethering him to the ring of a great iron stake that's been hammered into the ground if he was dead. Tongfun strains forward, entirely ignored by the Oirat. When the Oirat leaves the tent, Tongfun cries out in relief to see the slight rise and fall of Sui Jo's back where he lies, otherwise motionless, face down. Guangchuan, Tongfun tries to say through the gag, though it comes out as an unintelligible shout. Guangchuan! But Sui Jo doesn't stir. Tongfun tries to measure the passing of time by the quality of light shifting through the tent. But it's difficult. He's not in a cell in the capital with its familiar sunlight shafting through barreled windows this time. His body aches from being in the same position for so long, and his throat feels sealed closed from thirst. When Sui Jo finally stirs, he groans first, turning his head, and Tongfun sees him try to move his arm, only to find it restrained. He doesn't seem to understand it. Face pinched in pain and confusion. Tongfun aches to go to him, but he can't even speak anymore, his voice little more than a dry croak in his throat. After a time, Sui Jo blinks his eyes open, wincing, and rolls them to look around himself, clearly struggling to focus. Tongfun can't help it. He tries to make a noise, but it comes out soft and broken. Sui Jo's eyes shift to him nonetheless, and he seems to gain a little more clarity. Blinking rapidly, he tries again to draw his arms beneath himself to push himself up. When the attempt fails, he lifts his head, wincing, to see where he's tethered. He drops his forehead back to the ground, even as Tongfun hurts to see him. A part of him is exhilarated by the way that Sui Jo's back heaves unmistakably with breath. Painstakingly, Sui Jo shuffles up until he's sitting, hands held together on the ground between his knees.
"Are you hurt?"
he rasps, watching Tongfun intently. Tongfun makes a sound that's a half laugh, half sob. He shakes his head. Sui Jo sighs with relief and hunches over, head hanging low. Tongfun can see blood clumping his hair together at the back of his head. Sui Jo needs medical attention. They both need water. No one has even come to check on them.
"Was it a Shirtamore?"
Sui Jo asks, voice low with pain. Tongfun nods, sees Sui Jo's jaw tense in response.
"I'm sorry, Tongfun,"
he says, eyes cast down.
"This is my fault. I didn't even tell Wangsha where we were going."
Tongfun shakes his head angrily, grunting through the gag. Sui Jo looks up, and Tongfun tries to tell him how much of an idiot he is with his eyes alone. He thinks Sui Jo understands. His mouth curls in the faintest ghost of a smile before he looks down at his hands again. Tongfun just wishes he could speak. Being unable to communicate with Sui Jo hurts more than the rawness of the bindings around his wrists. The growing pain from being restrained in the same position for so long. Sui Jo painstakingly looks around at their surroundings as best he can, and then, seemingly exhausted, carefully lowers himself to lie down again, this time on his side, facing Tongfun. Tongfun can see he's struggling to keep his eyes open, and his heart twists with despair at the thought that Sui Jo is about to leave him alone again. As if he can sense it, Suezhou fixes his dark eyes on Tongfan's face, fingers flexing against the rope as he stares.
Wangxia is not stupid, Suezhou
slurs,
and Deng'er is with him. They will come.
His eyes drop closed and don't open again, no matter how much Tongfan wills them to. It gets gradually darker, until there's not enough light to see the movement of Suezhou's body as he breathes. Tongfan closes his eyes and tries to focus on anything other than the pain shooting through his aching body. They were captured in the morning, and now it's past sundown. Is this what they were captured for? A slow, painful death from neglect? The demands of his body are insistent, both hunger and the need to relieve himself coming and going in waves. Food he can go without, but he doesn't want to humiliate himself. He's not aware that he's slipped into a fugue state until the sound of shouting from outside rouses him. His body tenses instinctively, and he groans in pain, then strains his neck to try and see back over his shoulder.
Runjing.
Suizhou's voice is little more than a whisper, scraped raw by thirst. Tongfan jerks his head back towards him, but can barely see more than his prone shape in the darkness. Flashes of orange light glance against the side of the tent canvas, lit torches. Tongfan struggles uselessly against his bonds again, remembering the crossbow bolts as they left the capital. The carriage he was in bursting into flames. The shouting gets closer, incomprehensible to Tongfan in the thick Oirat tongue. He looks to Suezhou frantically and watches Suezhou struggle to his knees again, a hunched shadow. Someone enters the tent at a run, light flooding the space from a torch held aloft. Tongfan squints, frustrated by the pain at the sudden brightness, and flinches back as the torch is raised above his head. A moment later, someone else reaches for his bonds, and he's being untied from the pole. Another man approaches Suezhou with the same degree of urgency and cuts the line tethering Suezhou to the ground before slicing through the rope around Tongfan's ankles. Then both he and Suezhou are being hauled to their feet and dragged out of the tent. Tongfan tries and fails to get his feet under him, gasping through the gag as blood starts to flow through his cramping legs. Behind him, he can hear Suezhou's captors huffing as they carry the majority of his weight for him as well. The camp is well lit, braziers blazing between tents, and there's more light ahead in the direction they're being taken. A small crowd parts to let them through, and Tongfan realizes the light is from dozens of torches held aloft by men with bared swords. He doesn't have time to take in any more before a Shirtamore is looming in front of him. He lashes out to grip a fistful of Tongfan's hair, with strength that makes tears spring to Tongfan's eyes. A Shirtamore wrenches him forward and throws him to the ground. Hands still tied behind his back, Tongfan isn't able to break his own fall, and he lies still where he lands, trying to breathe through the pain. "Is that what you wanted?" A Shirtamore spits in Mandarin.
"And the other one,"
a voice says from somewhere in front of Tongfan, strong and calm. Suezhou is dragged forward and dumped unceremoniously next to him. At least his hands were tied in front of him. He immediately, if unsteadily, tries to push himself up and walk on his knees towards Tongfan. "Now leave before I change my mind." Ashutamar turns and stalks away. Tongfan feels hands again at his arms, and he's once more hauled to his feet, but gently this time. The rope tying his wrists is cut, and he gives a soft, involuntary cry of pain as his arms are released from their position behind his back. A moment later, the gag pulls away, and Suezhou is reaching for him with his freed hands. "Don't help me," Tongfan rasps. "I should be helping you." Suezhou's expression is raw, pained. It hurts Tongfan to look at. Neither of them help each other in the end. The men who cut them free tuck shoulders under their arms and lead them toward the rest of their party. There are a great number of them on horseback, also with torches aloft and their swords held at the ready. At their head sits Gao Yi, dressed in black armor with elaborate oirat braids weaving through his hair. His eyes glitter as he meets Tang Fan's eyes.
Tang Daren, it seems it is my turn to free you.
Tang Fan tries to raise his arms in a bow. He can barely lift them. He lowers his head instead.
Gao Jiangjun, we are in your debt.
They are helped onto horses, and Tang Fan splits his attention between the concentration needed to hold on and glancing sideways to make sure Sui Zhou is managing the same. Sui Zhou seems a lot more alert than he did the first time he woke up, though his expression is still grim with pain, and he's slumping in the saddle. Tang Fan can't tell where they're going anyway. Even if he could read the stars, they're shrouded by clouds tonight, and the prairie stretches out featurelessly on either side of them. He needs help to get off the horse again when they arrive in another camp, not so dissimilar from the last. Sui Zhou is already dismounted and waiting when Tang Fan's feet touch the ground, and Tang Fan finally leans into him as he wraps his arm around Tang Fan's shoulders. Gao Yi is standing in front of them, and he looks them over with a critical, pitying eye.
There's a tent for you. I'll send a medic and some food. We'll talk in the morning.
The tent is warm and well lit, stove radiating heat with its chimney stretching up next to the central pole, candles and lanterns filling the space with warm light. The medic comes first, ignoring Sui Zhou's gesturing to Tang Fan and sitting him down near a light source to examine the wound at the back of his head. Not long after comes the food, along with a stack of clean clothes, and Tang Fan foregoes changing out of his filthy clothing in favor of devouring the meat as quick as he can pick it up, barely even tasting it.
Slow down, the medic says, casting a disgruntled eye in Tang Fan's direction.
Tang Fan deigns to eat a fraction slower, but only because his belly, already sloshing with the water he drank on the ride, is starting to feel painfully full. He takes a few more mouthfuls and pushes the plate aside, leaving the rest for Sui Zhou. When the medic has left, Sui Zhou eats. He looks painfully soft, with his head bandaged and hair swept to the side in a long braid. Someone brings a basin of hot water, and Sui Zhou insists that Tang Fan wash first. When it comes to removing his clothes, however, the task is too much. He doesn't think there's a muscle in his body that doesn't hurt, a joint that isn't bruised. Sui Zhou helps him undress with careful hands, keeping his gaze politely above Tang Fan's shoulders as Tang Fan hisses with pain, then moving away to give Tang Fan privacy. Given the condition of his body and his flagging energy, Tang Fan washes as quickly as possible, thinking longingly of the deep bath in Wang Shi's guest rooms. He shrugs on the loose, borrowed robe when he's done and goes to sit on one of the broad sleeping platforms, aware, even as he does so, that he might not be able to get up again. He doesn't expect to fall asleep while he waits for Sui Zhou to finish bathing, but he startles awake again with a choked gasp, heart lurching as Sui Zhou falls again behind his eyes. But Sui Zhou is alive, and here. His hand is on Tang Fan's shoulder, and he's leaning down to look into Tang Fan's face, concerned. He kissed Tang Fan last night. It feels like days ago. Sui Zhou crouches in front of him and gently takes Tang Fan's hands. He has a pot of ointment, and Tang Fan watches as he scoops some onto his fingers, then starts to carefully smooth it over Tang Fan's raw wrists. Tang Fan feels tears rise thick in his throat. So focused is he on swallowing them down that when Sui Zhou reaches for his face, Tang Fan flinches away. He smiles, rueful in apology, a moment later, though it feels weak. He forces himself to hold still as Sui Jo gently daubs the ointment near the corners of Tang Fan's mouth, the tender skin where the Hessian gag had chafed the worst. Sui Jo replaces the lid on the ointment pot, then rises slowly, weariness in the sloped lines of his shoulders. Tang Fan lies down on the soft heap of furs, curled up on his side, and watches as Sui Jo snuffs out most of the candles, leaving just a few burning, enough so that they can see each other at least. Then he lowers himself carefully to the other sleeping platform and rolls himself into the thick blanket. Tang Fan stares into the dimly lit tent, eyes unfocused. He is so tired. So tired, but he doesn't want to close his eyes again. The space Sui Jo had made under the blankets and furs for them had been so warm. He'd pulled Tang Fan to him, encouraged Tang Fan to touch him. The look on his face when he was hit from behind. Tang Fan grits his teeth with resolve and pushes himself upright. He shuffles across to Sui Jo's sleeping platform, legs already stiff from lying down for a short length of time. Sui Jo holds the blanket up wordlessly, and Tang Fan crawls in under it next to him. Another fur is pulled over the top of them, and Tang Fan cleaves to Sui Jo's side, clutching him. Sui Jo tugs the edge of the blankets up to tuck over their shoulders and wraps his arms around Tang Fan's trembling body. Tang Fan shouldn't be here when the sun rises again, when Gao Yi comes to talk to them. But for now, it's enough to feel the movement of Sui Jo's breath where he clings to Sui Jo's chest, to sleep. Tang Fan wakes before Sui Jo the next morning, though he can't help but shake Sui Jo's shoulder when he finds him still unconscious next to him. Sui Jo's face creases in sleepy confusion, and Tang Fan heaves a sigh of relief. "Go back to sleep," he says softly, resisting the urge to smooth Sui Jo's face with his hands. It's a testament to Sui Jo's body's need to heal that he follows Tang Fan's instruction, eyes slipping closed again. By the time Gao Yi visits, they are both awake and dressed, Sui Jo scooping spicy congee from the pot they've been brought into Tang Fan's bowl. They both put down their breakfast swiftly as Gao Yi steps into the tent, bowing low in unison. Gao Yi is smiling wryly when they rise again, and he gestures for them to sit.
"I will speak, you eat," he says. "You must be wondering how I found you."
"Gao Jiangjun," Tang Fan says around a mouthful. "It is only one of many things I am eager to find out."
Gao Yi huffs in amusement. "We found your horses first. It was obvious they were not bred on the prairie. A fine mystery which made more sense once my agents in Usher Damore's camp brought me intelligence that he had taken Ming prisoners."
"How did you know it was us?"
Gao Yi shakes his head. "I didn't, but I know what it meant that Usher Damore had taken Ming prisoners, knew that it wouldn't be any ordinary travelers or merchants. From your horses, I knew you were not military. I thought at least you must be government agents."
"Usher Damore has been planning something,"
Sui Jo deduces. Gao Yi nods.
"When we returned, he was disciplined by the Khan with a restriction in his access to clan resources. But he still has his loyal followers. There is little the Khan can do to censure him without stirring civil unrest in the clan."
"Which is not what either of them want," Tang Fan says grimly. Gao Yi meets his gaze, confirming Tang Fan's unspoken deductions with his next words.
"Usher Damore seeks to incite conflict with the Ming, to unify the Oirat tribes against a common enemy."
"And Borona Hala seeks to improve mutual relations between us," Tang Fan deduces.
"Exactly."
Tang Fan sighs, troubled. How pleased he must have been to find us. you were seen in the Sundao settlement,
Gao Yi confirms. Next to Tang Fan, Sui Zhou goes very still.
A Shutamor deduced from his experience in the capital that the governor of Hetao might go to great lengths to ensure your safety.
He underestimates the governor of Hetao,
Sui Zhou says dryly, and Tang Fan has to agree. Why would he hand us over to you so easily, then? Tang Fan presses. Gao Yi leans back.
Our forces were evenly matched last night, but we would never have come to blows. Ashurtamor doesn't wish to fight with Oirats. Civil conflict would undermine his cause immediately and irrevocably.
Have you been in discussion with Wang Zhifu about these matters?
Sui Zhou asks. Gao Yi shakes his head.
No, until yesterday I hadn't been sure Ashurtamor's plan to engage the Ming had been anything more than an idea. He has been pouring most of his efforts into securing allies within the Oirat.
Tang Fan frowns. What does he have to offer, with reduced resources from his brother? Surely any who are aligned to his views are already behind his cause.
Gao Yi's expression hardens. He seeks to use marriage to develop stronger clan relationships. But the woman who would bring him the tribal partnership he seeks is unwilling. My agents say he has been keeping her against his will, refusing to release her until she agrees to the union.
Tang Fan feels outrage rise in his gullet. How has she not been rescued yet?
Gao Yi shakes his head grimly. Unfortunately, Oirat family politics are not so simple. Borona Hala is just as eager to avoid civil conflict. It would only further Ashutamor's agenda should his brother's forces abduct his betrothed.
He practically spits out the last words, such are their bitterness, mirroring Tang Fan's own feelings.
Gao Jiangjun,
Sui Zhou says softly into the heavy silence.
Are your wife and son well?
Gao Yi blinks at him, his face abruptly softening.
They are well, adjusting to their new life, but well.
I am glad to hear it, Sui Zhou says. Perhaps they would enjoy some reminder of home. I'm sure Wang Zhifu would welcome them graciously into his home at Hetao, should you wish to share a meal with us and catch up on the latest news from the capital.
Gao Yi looks at him, eyes narrow and calculating.
Sui Baihu, you are correct. It is something Gao Furen would appreciate very much.
Tang Fan feels the heaviness in his heart lighten a fraction. Of course Wang Shi will be able to help.
Perhaps we may discuss arrangements with Wang Shifu on our return to Hetao?
Sui Zhou suggests. Gao Yi's mouth is pressed into a pleased, if hard, smile.
We are less than a day's ride. We'll set off as soon as you're ready.
A patrol rides out to meet them as they approach Hetao. Chen Yue is at their head, and he pulls his eager mount to a halt as they meet on the road, its snorting breath steaming in the cold air.
Darens, you are late,
he says gruffly, glancing over Sui Zhou and Tang Fan briefly, before fixing his gaze on Gao Yi.
Gao Jiangjun,
he acknowledges stiffly, expression inscrutable. Gao Yi lowers his head respectfully.
Chen Jiangjun, I hope that my intention to escort Tang Daren and Sui Baihu to Wang Shifu is not something you will object to.
Chen Yue casts his eyes over the four men on horseback behind Gao Yi. He'd brought a deliberately small party, just enough to suit his status, not enough to pose any real threat.
Chen Yue gives a stiff nod.
I will accompany you, he says.
The horse tail on his helmet hisses through the air as he steers his horse around to take position at their head. The patrol splits, half of them taking up position behind the Oirat party, half riding in front. Tang Fan sees Gao Yi stiffen in his saddle and wills this to go smoothly.
Wang Zhe and Jia Kui are waiting at the top of the steps in front of the governor's residence. Wang Zhe takes in Tang Fan and Sui Zhou's somewhat battered appearance with an impassive gaze, then sets his eyes on Gao Yi and bows. Wang Zhe had wondered if the Black General would honor him with a visit. He says, polite and upbeat. Gao Yi dismounts and bows in return. Forgive this one for not coming sooner. There have been other matters taking my attention. Perhaps we might speak about them inside, Wang Shi says, stepping aside to gesture forward. He meets Chen Yue's gaze for a moment and gives an almost imperceptible nod. They enter the courtyard, and as soon as Tang Fan steps inside, he's almost knocked down again. Deng Er has flung herself at him, is wrapped around his chest. Tang Daga, she wails. Tang Fan returns the embrace, feeling something in him settle. At least Deng Er was safe, here. She draws back to look up at him. She's not quite crying, but Tang Fan can see the hard downturn of her mouth, the redness of her eyes. Sui Daga, she says a moment later, voice wobbling this time, and Sui Zhou opens his arms in time for her to launch herself against him as well. He closes his eyes as he embraces her. She's tall enough for her head to come up above his chin now, but she still lays it on his shoulder. Tang Fan smiles, warmth swelling in his chest. Wang Zhe and Gao Yi are walking ahead of them to the reception room, and Tang Fan and Sui Zhou have to hurry to keep up with them. Deng Er leaves more easily than Tang Fan would have thought when Sui Zhou murmurs something to her about noodle soup. Gao Yi declines Wang Zhe's polite gesture to sit.
I will not stay long, Wang Daren.
Wang Zhe bows politely.
I understand, Gao Jiangjun. There must be matters you need to attend to. Wang Zhe only wishes to thank you for returning that which he had so carelessly misplaced.
Gao Yi smirks, even as Tang Fan bristles. Sui Zhou interjects before Tang Fan can open his mouth.
Wang Daren, I hope you will forgive my presumption, but I suggested to Gao Jiangjun that we might entertain his family for a meal soon, to share news of the capital. It has been almost a year since they left.
No apology is necessary, Sui Daren,
Wang Zhe says, giving his familiar half-smile.
It is an excellent suggestion.
He turns again to Gao Yi.
Wang Zhe would be honored to host Gao Jiangjun and his family.
They agree to meet again 4 days from now, and Gao Yi leaves just as swiftly as he arrived. When it's just the three of them left, Jia Kui lurking by the open door to watch the Oirats leave, Wang Zhe gives them another look over.
I hope your errand was worth it to nearly start another war.
Wang Zhe, it's not like you to resort to hyperbole, Tang Fan retorts. Wang Zhe sniffs.
You left Deng Er behind, he says simply.
He turns to Sui Zhou.
Do you need a doctor?
Yes, he does, Tang Fan blurts before Sui Zhou can deny it. Sui Zhou gives him a hard stare.
I will have Jia Kui send for one, and for Wuyun Bulaga. He was looking for you as well.
Wang Zhe, it was a short amour, Tang Fan says urgently, as Wang Zhe moves to leave the room. Wang Zhe stops, turns back to look at him.
I thought as much, he says simply, and leaves.